Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, an election earthquake. President-elect Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton concedes, protests in the streets. The transition begins. At the end of a bitterly divisive campaign, Donald Trump spoke to supporters at his victory party in New York in the early hours of Wednesday morning.
To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people.
Hours later, Hillary Clinton spoke. It will be, she said, a longer road than her backers had expected.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time. But I want you to remember this. Our campaign was never about one person or even one election.
And in cities across the country, tens of thousands took to the streets to protest Trump's win. This hour On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Nancy Cordes of CBS, Paul Lisnick of WGN News, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. We are broadcasting this week from the studios of WBEZ on the Lake Michigan shore in Chicago. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How are you thinking, feeling about the victory of President-elect Donald Trump? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Nancy Cordes, congressional correspondent who for many months all over the country covered the election campaign for CBS News. Nancy, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
With me in the studios in WBEZ in Chicago, Paul Lisnick joins us, political analyst for WGN News, Chicago's big independent TV station, and host of Politics Tonight on CLTV. Paul, thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
And with us from Boston today, Jack Beatty. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Nancy, and Paul.
I want to come to each of you right off the bat and just get your big, broad take on what brought us this outcome. Paul, when you look at this, it's President Donald Trump now. It looks like the popular majority of the vote went to Hillary Clinton, but we've got an electoral college, and we know how that works, and it's happened before. Donald Trump, on that count, has won. What's the big dynamic, to your mind, that brought this result?
Well, while Donald Trump won the election, you have to look and ask whether or not Hillary Clinton lost the election. And by that, I mean she certainly won the popular vote. But did African Americans, Hispanics, millennials, did they come out in the numbers that they needed to for her? Trump actually polled similarly to how – did similarly to how Mitt Romney did back in 2012. But Hillary Clinton did not hit Obama numbers from 2012. And I think overall that cost her. I think a lot of people sort of thought this thing was so in the bag for her anyway that they just didn't go to the polls and they woke up to something they didn't expect.
Nancy Cordes, you were on the campaign trail for many months. What was it that brought out this big vote for Donald Trump? You've been watching, you've been listening, and here it was. It was enough to put him over the top and with a significant Electoral College count victory. Lay it out for us, Nancy. What brought this result?
Well, I think what we heard over and over again over the course of 2 years on the campaign trail was people saying, I just feel like my life is not getting any better. If anything, it's getting worse. My income hasn't risen. It's going to be harder for me to send my child to college. My community, a lot of resources within my community are disappearing, and I'm just afraid. And I think that at the very least, Donald Trump will be a big change, and what do we have to lose? And so while Hillary Clinton may have been offering things that could make a concrete difference, things like affordable college, et cetera, what they heard from Donald Trump is, we're going to be great. We're gonna take some risks, and they're gonna pay off. And I think that that is what a lot of people wanted to hear. And I think that the Clinton campaign and probably everyone underestimated how powerful that message was.
Jack Beatty, Donald Trump took this country, took us into language and ways of talking on the campaign trail that I have never seen in my lifetime from any major party candidate. And with that and more, he won. How do you account for the victory?
Well, I think to pick up on what Nancy was saying, that he identified with a prevailing sentiment in a lot of the country, namely what Richard Hofstadter years ago called status anxiety, the feeling of dominant groups, that they're threatened by rising groups. And periodically in our politics, when this has happened, there's been a kind of what Hofstadter called a paranoid style reaction. That is, the threatened groups look at outgroups, Jesuits, the Illuminati, communists, whoever it might be, and blame them for their troubles. There was a lot of that going on in Trump world, and Trump connected with this anxiety because it's one he feels. A biographer of his says his main concern in life is maintaining his outer appearance, his status. It's a different thing for him, of course, than it is for these other people. But you just can't miss that in some fundamental way he tapped into this periodic phase of our politics, this paranoid style in American politics that is different from the politics of interests, the old stuff, liberal and conservative, and very different from the politics of ideology.
Hillary Clinton came out finally hours after Donald Trump's victory speech. It was almost noon of the next day before she came. Said this would be painful for her and her people for a long time. But she held out that American tradition of, here we go, new guy, he's elected, and let's get behind him. Here she was.
Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead. Our constitutional democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power. And we don't just respect that, we cherish it.
President Obama striking much the same note in the Oval Office, but in the streets in cities across the country. Different story. Here's the sound of protests in Portland, Oregon last night. Protesters got violent. Police used flashbangs to disperse the crowd. Nancy, what about this front? Again, you've been all over the country. You felt the tensions, you felt the passions, you felt the hopes, you felt the fears. We've got protests in a lot of cities. Now, most of them are just people chanting and saying, you know, no to the Trump way. You've got others, of course, who are celebrating Trump all over the place. Almost the same number in the popular vote came out for Donald Trump. He was very close there, though Hillary Clinton appears to have come out ahead. What about this protest movement in the streets? What's the source? What's the message, Nancy?
I think one big source is fear. Frankly, I think that there are a lot of minorities, especially African Americans and Muslims, who feel that they woke up in a different country on Wednesday morning than they thought that they lived in. They felt that the things that Donald Trump said about them, about their communities, about wanting to ban Muslims, would turn off at least a majority of their fellow Americans because they would see them as fundamentally unfair, even racist. And when he won, if not the popular vote, the Electoral College, what that said to them was, actually, no. People do agree with him on these things. And while I don't actually believe that the lion's share of Trump supporters voted for him because of the things that he said about African-American communities or because of his support for a Muslim ban, I think most people who voted for him despite those things. I do think that the fact that they were willing to accept those beliefs, those comments, those proposals, said to a lot of minority voters out there that their concerns are not paramount in this society, at least right now. That's how they feel. That's what they've said to me in the past few days. And so I think, you know, it's going to be a tense time, frankly, in the next few months as people sort out what his election means for this country and for minority groups who felt persecuted by some of the things he said.
And we do have reports coming in already from around the country of Muslims being the target of hate language incidents, some serious and some not so serious. But what's not serious here, if people feel that the new president of the United States has given them a kind of endorsement for that kind of
hitting out. On CNN on Tuesday night, commentator Van Jones said that Donald Trump needs to reach out to minority communities now that he offended during the election. Van Jones called the election result a different kind of backlash.
This was a white lash. This was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president in part. And that's the part where the pain comes. And Donald Trump has a responsibility tonight to come out and reassure people that he is going to be the president of all the people who he insulted and offended and brushed aside.
Now, he has done some of that in these days. But, of course, there's a whole long campaign behind us. Paul, when you look out on this, people are looking for a new opportunity. They're looking for a new way. There are people voting for Donald Trump who just wanted to get out from under government regulations, they might say, and a whole lot else, looking for a fresh start. There are also, we've seen this throughout the campaign, there were people in there with racial resentment. How do you see the balance here?
Look, I think what we're going to have to look at are, in the coming weeks, who are his appointments and what are his policies? You know, even here in a local school, there was a sign already posted, whites only.
In Chicago.
You see that kind of, as you say, Tom, backlash where people are getting scared now about what his victory seems to authorize in terms of behavior in a religious or ethnic way. And Trump is not speaking out to that very much right now. I think a lot of people had hope, given his comments with the president in the Oval Office, given his comments on election night, that maybe the gravitas of what has happened to him, which is that he is about to be president, has hit him. The bottom line is we're going to watch his appointments. If he starts bringing in the Newt Gingriches as Secretary of State and the Rudy Giulianis as Attorney General, then there are concerns ahead, I think.
But those are the first names on that we've seen so far. I mean, who knows what it'll actually be? But those are Christie, Giuliani,
Steve Bannon is chief of staff. These are not reach outs to anybody except his base. And that's all he's ever played to. You know, we had a lot of questions. Would he ever expand his base? He never needed to. He just had to get him to show up to the polls. And he did.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news today. Donald Trump wins the American presidency. Headline of the week, a headline that will resonate for a long, long time. Nancy Cordes is with us from CBS News, congressional correspondent there. She's been out on the campaign trail for many months. We'll look with her at what may come off Capitol Hill as that Republican-dominated institutions meet the Republican now coming White House. Paul Lisnick is with us in Chicago. We're at the studios of WBEZ in Chicago today, political analyst for WGN News in Chicago. Jack Beatty is here, and you can join us. How are you responding to the election outcome? What does it tell us about this country, this moment? And what are you watching to see how the Trump years will unfold? What are your hopes now? What are your fears? President Obama and Donald Trump having a much longer than expected, nearly 90-minute meeting in the Oval Office in the White House yesterday. Donald Trump spoke at the end of that meeting, sitting next to the president, said he wants to continue talking with this president, who he attacked fiercely on the campaign trail, wants to continue talking with Obama going forward.
I very much look forward to dealing with the president in the future, including counsel. He explained some of the difficulties, some of the high-flying assets, and some of the really great things that have been achieved.
And at his side, as the cameras clicked away, President Obama was supportive.
We now are going to want to do everything we can to help you succeed, because if you succeed, then the country succeeds.
So there's that pull together right now. Internationally, we'll see what happens. I mean, greetings came in from around the world from people in power, but also some pretty fierce criticism out there. This was Dame Margaret Beckett. She was Britain's foreign secretary under Tony Blair, Labour MP now, member of parliament. They're talking with Sky News on the day of Trump's victory and being very blunt about what she thought from the UK of the news.
By tomorrow, everybody will be seeing the good in Donald Trump because he's been elected. But today, let's just tell the truth. This is a vile and horrible man who has fought a vile and horrible campaign. I'm not just talking about the way he treated Hillary Clinton. Look at the way he treated his opponents in the Republican primaries. He insulted them. He sneered at them. He told lies about them. He insulted their families. This is a horrible man.
Okay, tell us what you really think. A former British foreign secretary there. It's going to be interesting times domestically and abroad. Nancy Cordes, take us to Washington. And what is seen already about what Donald Trump is beginning to unfold. They have 4,000 political appointments to make, the people who will run the machinery of the federal government, the quite large machinery, from the top and right on out and up toward Capitol Hill. What is beginning to emerge? What are the first signs of where a Trump administration will go? Who will fill out the positions that will lead the country, Nancy?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of whiplash on Capitol Hill because you have a lot of Republicans, in fact, most Republican senators who were unwilling to campaign with Donald Trump, who were very nervous about the prospect of a Trump presidency, who often wouldn't even utter his name, now suddenly switching gears. Because despite all their fears about how erratic a president they thought he might be, he will help them do some things that they have been desperately wanting to do for years, but never could because there was a Democrat in power. So it is a deep irony. And you saw Trump and Paul Ryan basically burying the hatchet yesterday, all smiles, talking about all the great things that they're going to do together, even though during the campaign, Paul Ryan said that Donald Trump said things that were the textbook definition of racism, and Trump said he didn't want Paul Ryan's support. Now they say that they'll be able to work together to cut taxes. They want to work on immigration, although certainly there's a lot about immigration that they don't quite see eye to eye on, namely the wall. Then there's Obamacare, which is a huge priority for Republicans on Capitol Hill and for Donald Trump as well, to dismantle it. And they will have the power now to repeal it as early as January.
Here's a little bit of that sound. I mean, even before they met, here was Paul Ryan in Janesville, Wisconsin, first thing Wednesday morning, reacting to a Trump victory.
What Donald Trump just pulled off is an enormous political feat. It's an enormous feat in that he heard those voices that were out there that other people weren't hearing. And he just earned a mandate. And we now just have that unified Republican government.
Unified Republican government. Lots of callers here. Steve in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thanks for calling, Steve. You're on the air. What do you see?
Tom, I think it's very encouraging that a candidate can run and even prevail without the help of pundits, academics, and celebrities. And that's very encouraging. I think it should be to everyone. And I think the people that pushed Trump over are the non-minority, non-collegiate, and family women as opposed to careerists. And these are the kinds of people that have just found their voice, and I think that it is a great thing for democracy.
Why? I mean, everybody should have a voice. Why does it strike you as great that those in particular or exclusively those have found their voice, Steve?
Because I think, Tom, with the stigmatization that many people feel, you know, being called racist, homophobe, Islamophobe, you know, you name it, these stigmatizing labels that are put on anyone who disagrees with the liberal agenda, a lot of these people have been afraid to speak up. They've been cowed by the almost suffocating air of political correctness that this country has fallen into.
I get it. PC can be very suffocating if it's too intense. On the other hand, we have a history in this country of racism. It's not as though there isn't Islamophobia or homophobia. Is that empowered here, too? The real deal, Steve?
I don't think it is, because even though there are those of us whom I think Jack B. would call these other people, we are not antagonistic to any of these groups, but we do not feel that our opinions should be ignored, and we should be accused of all these terrible things simply because we don't go along with the kind of secularist liberal agenda that has been foisted upon us in the last 15 years or so, or certainly the last
Steve, years. Steve, got it. I mean, I've got that. On the other hand, let's watch out for real acts of racism, Islamophobia, homophobia. We do not want to see the real thing in this country, and there's some evidence of it, certainly on the campaign trail, and already since the vote came down. But let's hope that that stays very small. That is not the American ideal at all. I appreciate your call. Terrence in Omaha, Nebraska. Terrence, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom and guests. I guess I'm on the other side of the previous caller. I woke up a little confused, and I feel out of touch with my country, to be quite honest. I can't believe it, and I think a lot of it's that speech Trump, the acceptance speech he gave, I think he had to give a speech like that, but that's not what got him elected. His rhetoric on bigotry and exclusiveness did. And I agree with Van Jones on CNN. I think this is a white lash of the changing country that we have coming. And I don't get it. I feel like it's September 12th, 2001. I'm just shocked and awed. And, yeah, it's very difficult for me. And
Terrence, we hear it. We hear the emotion. And I've heard a lot of it, plenty of it this week. I mean, you can certainly see Trump supporters, of course, celebrating here. But there have been tears this week as well. I mean, Jack, speak to the depth of what can feel to people on either side of this vote like just an enormous canyon between. Clinton supporters who feel like this is some kind of rollback of everything they expected for the 21st century. Trump supporters feeling like this is a roll-in of what they've been missing and wanting. How does a country deal with this kind of gulf, Jack?
Messily and over time, and let's hope the tensions abate. But Steve, I think, makes a good point, if a little pungently for my taste. I'm not aware that I say other people, but perhaps I do. And it is undoubtedly a characteristic of American liberalism to divide the world, as Reinhold Niebuhr said, into the children of light and the children of darkness. And the children of light are those who are enlightened. All of that is true, and righteousness is true, and self-righteousness on the part of liberals. I think all of that is accurate. And Trump, I think, really spoke to that. I think that when people, you know, when liberals and populists, economic populists, talk about elites, they mean corporate elites, they mean money. When Trump voters talk about elites, it's what Steve is talking about. It's professors, it's liberals, it's commentators, it's the righteous, it's the secular people who have, in a way, given to their secular views the weight of morality and high-mindedness.
Jack, they might well say these are American ideals, and we're simply serious about pursuing them. They're right there in our Constitution. We want to bring them to life.
I think that's undoubtedly the case. But here's the problem. I mean, look at the Clinton campaign. How did she run that campaign? We heard from Nina Turner, former state senator in Ohio and a big Bernie Sanders supporter. She said the Clinton campaign was trying to shame people. And I heard that and I thought, oh. And I remember the ads I saw, which were all of Donald Trump saying vile things. No one could endorse anything he said. They were just awful.
How is that shaming people?
Because it was basically saying, if you vote for this guy, you're you're the kind of person who endorses this kind of language.
Well, that's one interpretation, Jack. But I remember that ad and all the children watching all that really rough stuff.
I understand.
And you don't have to. I mean, you could just think about the kids. But clearly, Nancy Curtis, to a lot of Americans, that kind of language, that kind of rough stuff was not enough to turn them away from this path. You've been out there, Nancy. How does the country deal with this gulf?
You know, I have teachers at my children's school here in Washington who have had to have talks with the kids already to reassure them that Donald Trump is not, in fact, going to put Hillary Clinton in jail. So there are a lot of children who were in fact shaken by some of the rhetoric and paid attention, and are adjusting. Beyond that, there is going to be a big challenge here in Washington, because you have a lot of, you know, certainly there are going to be a lot of presidential appointments to all the federal agencies, for example, but there are also a lot of civil servants in those agencies who have worked there for decades and who have served Democrats. and Republican presidents and are now at a bit of a loss, many of them, because it's not the fact that Donald Trump is a Republican that gives them pause about working in his administration. It's his tone. It's the bombast. It's the whiplash of one position one day, another position the next. It's the constant victimization of himself. I mean, you saw him tweet last night. I guess he had gotten his Twitter back that these protests on the street are professional protesters being egged on by the media, even though the election was so successful. This is someone who for weeks warned that the election was rigged.
He came back later and said he admired the passion of the protesters on the street. I don't know.
Either he did or someone. They took Twitter back again. Hard to say. But that is so there is another concern as well, which is that there could be something of a brain drain at federal agencies as career civil servants who are really the ones, frankly, with the knowledge. You know, it's often not the political appointees who come in and serve for a few years. It's the people who have been working at the Department of Labor and Health and Human Services and
the
EPA for decades. Mm-hmm. If they, you know, they don't all have the means to leave, and they all have to support their families. But some of them, if they can, you know, at the State Department or elsewhere, may choose to leave government. And, you know, these are the people that we don't talk about very often, but who actually enable the government to operate.
We've got Donald Trump has said he wants to drain the swamp, but we've got former lobbyists coming in, apparently, on this list of Trump people coming in, lobbyists for individual industries now being brought in to oversee or to help decide who will oversee those industries. We'll go there. But, Paul, first, this question of the Gulf. You're right here in Chicago. You're feeling it right from the middle of the country. Bridgeable, how?
First of all, when you look at the Illinois vote, it's amazing. The blue part of Illinois was the Chicago area and a couple of other counties. Mm-hmm. Other than that, Illinois, amazingly red. People don't see it that way. Mm-hmm. I think that the concern that I have, that people have, is this is not a difference in policy between Republicans and Democrats. Barack Obama had a difference with John McCain and Mitt Romney, but nobody ever questioned whether or not Mitt Romney or John McCain.
There are policy differences, but you're not saying that's not the essence.
I'm saying it's not the essence of this is the policy difference. The essence of this is the rhetoric and the approach. So even the previous caller, Steve, almost needs to you need to dismiss or pay no attention to the way in which Donald Trump presents his message, what he says about women, what he said about John McCain.
How do you do that? That has real consequences.
Well, I don't think you can, and that's exactly my point, is that the people who are, many of whom are Trump supporters, seem to be simply forgiving what he says. It's locker room talk. I don't even have to give you the examples. My comments and your listeners know exactly what we're talking about. The president of the United States doesn't get to speak that way. He can have policies. He can work for tax cuts. He can go try and build. But when you start judging people based on religion and ethnicity and sexual orientation and on, I'm sorry. And with due respect to Steve, you can have your views, but the president doesn't get to speak to those in the most base of ways, and you cannot ignore it.
Well, but you can say that, but we don't know where that's going to go as we sit here right now. He did on the campaign.
Well, we see where it's going, Tom, because
we're seeing signs.
That's correct. And the question is, if Donald Trump doesn't speak out to stop it, to encourage people to stop it, then people are empowered to say, I'm entitled to. We're hearing about people being pulled, Muslim people being pulled out of their cars and beaten up. This is not in a good place right now. It needs to change. And he is the one that's got the responsibility to change it, not Barack Obama and not Paul Ryan.
Nancy Cordes, they're talking about bringing in Steve Bannon potentially as chief of staff in the White House. Perhaps Reince Priebus, head of the Republican National Committee. But Steve Bannon, I mean, he's part of the alt-right, this sort of very racially tinged wing of the conservative movement. Does that sound like a serious suggestion to you that he might be Donald Trump's chief of staff in the White House?
I think it's completely serious. I mean, he was there in the closing months of this campaign. So I'm sure he gets a lot of credit from Donald Trump and others in Trump world for help pushing him over the finish line. And Breitbart lionized Trump over all of his Republican opponents during the primary. So Donald Trump certainly owes Steve Bannon quite a bit of gratitude. And Steve Bannon was really behind the lionization of the alt-right at Breitbart as well. This was not a, you know, sort of the original mission of that news outlet, if you can call it that, to be a mouthpiece for the alt-right. But it was a stated goal of Steve Bannon's. And he's, you know, had a lot of things to say about Jewish Americans and a lot of other groups as well. So, you know, whether he chooses Bannon or Priebus will be instructive about how he plans to govern. But I'm quite sure that if Steve Bannon isn't his chief of staff, he will have some other key role.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org. Org number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, if you can look there, Stephen Colbert hosted a live election night special on Showtime. On his show the next day, he talked with God about the election results.
Says here Hillary got more votes than Trump.
Yeah, well, that's the popular vote. She lost the Electoral College.
Oh, that again? I'm omniscient. Even I don't know how the hell that works.
Janet Reno, the first woman to serve as U.S. Attorney General, died Monday.
I've always told people if they don't like what's going on in their government, they shouldn't stand on the sidelines and complain. They should be involved. And I think it's important in a democracy that people participate.
And legendary singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen has died. He was 82, wrote epic moving songs, Hallelujah, Suzanne. Here's the title track from his last album, You Want It Darker, released just last month.
Magnified, sanctified be thy holy name. Vilified, crucified in the human frame. A million candles burning for the help that never came. You want it darker.
We are looking at a week in the news. Donald Trump wins the American presidency, the big headline. You can join us. What are you thinking as you hear the names being floated for Trump's cabinet? Gingrich, Giuliani, Christie, Sarah Palin maybe for Secretary of Interior, Breitbart's Steve Bannon for Chief of Staff. If you supported Trump, do you understand the people in grief now? If you are distraught, do you understand why so many wanted this change? And on this Veterans Day, beyond, how does the country come back together? With Paul Lisnick of WGN News here with me in Chicago at the studios of WBEZ today. Nancy Cordes of CBS News with us from Washington, congressional correspondent there, and Jack Beatty. Here was Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell talking with reporters on Capitol Hill Wednesday, saying he hopes President Trump will undo many of President Obama's executive actions.
One of the things I hope the new president, and he mentioned this during the campaign, will do is take a look at all of the unilateral actions that the president took, both through executive orders and regulatory overreach of one kind or another, and see how much he can undo of the unilateral actions the president took all by himself, which would not require us.
Nancy Cordes in Washington, what's available here for repeal, for rollback? If Donald Trump just goes after executive orders, what could he do?
I mean, he could undo almost all of it. You know, he can undo a lot of the moves to protect Dreamers. He can undo
children of undocumented immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Who were born here and they were brought here, rather, at a young age to live in the United States. And the United States is the only home they've ever known. He could undo, for example, a lot of the work that that the administration has done to help these children who have been sent across the border alone without any without any adult supervision, which a lot of people don't realize is still happening at as great a rate as it was when we had a child migrant crisis a couple of years ago. Mm. It's just that the government has gotten a lot better at handling these kids when they come across the border. And when it comes to Obamacare, frankly, Republicans in Congress have the numbers that they they need to repeal basically all of it. They can put a transition period in place so that the 20 million people who have gotten insurance as a result of the Affordable Care Act keep that insurance for, let's say, a year or two as they try to figure out exactly what to replace Obamacare with, if anything. But, you know, that's something that Republicans have struggled to define for 6 years now. They have often said that they would imminently be coming out with their proposal for what they would replace Obamacare with, but they have never actually done so because it turns out that there really aren't that many ways to both make insurance more affordable for people, either by bringing the cost down or providing a subsidy or what have you, and also expanding coverage at the same time. And so while the Affordable Care Act is far from perfect, as I think Democrats would acknowledge as well, finding a replacement for it that meets the same goals is excruciatingly difficult.
Nancy, what about on the energy front? Donald Trump has talked down human-caused climate change, talked down the Paris Climate Agreement. What latitude would he have if he starts rolling back Obama executive orders on the energy front?
You know, he would have a great deal of latitude, and Democrats in Congress and in the country could certainly scream and shout and try to marshal public opinion. But this is one issue that we have seen in the past is very difficult to get a lot of people really galvanized over in the moment because they don't immediately feel the impact, say, of increased carbon emissions. You know, it's something that is sort of a bit nebulous and happens in the future. It has an impact in the future. And so it's difficult in real time to marshal the kind of opposition that would force an administration to roll that back. And Donald Trump is already talking about potentially naming a leading climate change denier to head up the EPA. So I think that we can expect a lot of moves on that front to try to roll back environmental regulations, because Donald Trump himself has said that he thinks that climate change might be a Chinese hoax. He clearly doesn't put a lot of stock into it, so it's unlikely that the people that he appoints will either.
Paul, I mean, it may be hard to see day by day, but there are a lot of people very committed on the climate front. We've seen protests in the streets already. If he starts rolling all that back, there are a lot of people, we saw this with the Keystone Pipeline protests and more, who are desperately concerned about this looking forward. I could easily see more of them in the streets just on the energy issue, on the climate issue.
Tom, there's no question. I think Nancy's exactly right in everything that President Trump would have the power to undo. And so on the climate front, right, here's a guy who thinks it's all a hoax and it's a Chinese plot. So anything Obama has done to try and make progress in that area, of course, people who believe along those lines and reject the science will be happy that he does it. But the DACA concerns, the people who have come out of the shadows during Obama's term to say, no, I'm not documented, but here I am, now have concerns of whether somebody shows up at their house and sends them away. I know things probably don't work that way. Several people have been deported under Obama, more so than Bush. But the reality of what may happen still doesn't replace the fears of what people are having right now as they're uncertain as to what a Trump presidency means. And when you start presenting sort of the worst case scenario that Nancy did in terms of retracting Obama orders for right now, that's a reality.
People celebrating Trump's victory here and some abroad as well. Russian President Vladimir Putin congratulated President-elect Donald Trump yesterday, saying Russia is ready for warmer ties with the United States.
And I'd also like to congratulate Mr. Donald Trump with his victory in these elections.
Но Россия готова и хочет восстановления полноформатных отношений с Соединенными Штатами.
But Russia is ready and wants to restore the full-fledged relations with the United States.
Back home, you heard voices of support there, admiration at this point from Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, but also tough opposition. Here was Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren speaking at the AFL-CIO, saying Americans would continue, she said, to stand up to bigotry. No compromises ever on this one.
We will fight back against attacks on Latinos, on African Americans, on women's, on Muslims, on immigrants, on disabled Americans, on everyone. Whether Donald Trump sits in a glass tower or sits in the White House, we will not give an inch on this. Not now, not ever.
Lots of callers. New York, Dina in Lisbon, New York. Thank you for calling, Dina. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for taking my call.
My first concern is that I believe President-elect Donald Trump has a huge responsibility in front of him, huge task to bring our United States of America together. And I don't believe that he has the temperament or the ability to actually do that. Also, I have a lot of concern about the public's access to the White House to moving forward. Early on in his campaign, he started saying, you know, that the press and very negative things about our wonderful press who do a very, very hard job every day. And I really have a concern that we as a people are not going to have that access, basically because what happened yesterday. I mean, his the press surrounding him didn't get to the White House when he met with President Obama, and then when he left, they were kind of left behind. It's very concerning. His rhetoric about people of color, women, it just goes on and on. And I do agree that this was a backlash for the 8 years of a great president.
Dina, I appreciate your call. Nancy, again, there in Washington, is it clear at this point if Donald Trump will have, President Donald Trump, when that's his straight-up title, mm-hmm. will he have a press corps in the traditional style? Will he have reporters there at the White House covering, being briefed? Or he has really torn into the press on the campaign trail. Will he have that kind of coverage?
Right. So his press aide, Hope Hicks, says that he will and that they do plan to remedy this situation. But it should never have happened in the first place because it's no mystery that there are decades of precedents going back to John F. Kennedy that presidents and presidents-elect have what's known as a protective pool, a small group of reporters that represents the entire press corps. It rotates all the time, so they're different reporters all the time mm-hmm. from the White House press corps who go everywhere they go. They are in the motorcade everywhere the president goes. And there is a good reason for this. It's because if something were to happen, either to the president, Ronald Reagan getting shot in front of the Hilton, George Bush on 9/11, suddenly flying and not knowing where to land. You need a strong press corps who can tell the American people what is happening. And so the fact that
on day
one— Did
Trump's man person commit to that or not this week?
They say that they will. So, you know, we will see. I think it's something that is not difficult to remedy in short order. So they've made the commitment, and now let's see if they live up to it.
Paul, we've got questions coming in online here as well about the role of the press, both in the campaign season and now that Donald Trump is the president-elect. How do you think the press has comported itself in sort of digging into the issues of this campaign, digging into the background of the man? And what do you expect from the press in terms of this relationship, which has been a tense one with Trump, going forward now that he will be in the White House?
There's no question. I think all the attacks on the mainstream media and all these comments are – and I'm sorry because there's people who believe that. I'm sure listeners of yours do. But they're without basis. I mean, the press reports the news. And if the news was Donald Trump, that's what they reported. When the news was Hillary Clinton and James Comey, that's what they reported. I, too, like Nancy, was very disturbed yesterday when the protective pool of press was not with President-elect Trump as he proceeded to meet with the president and that, mm-hmm. and that day. We have seen Trump in the past ban certain presidents. When you write an editorial against him, you're out of the press pool. This is the kind of thing. Ask him some questions in future press conferences, which the tough press will do. Watch him ban them. I mean, I understand that people are saying he can't do that. The press people will fix it. He's going to be the president. And what he ultimately requires and demands is going to be the case. The press should be very worried about limited access, but I think that will lead to such incredible tension and pressure. There'll have to be a way to resolve that, but I don't think it's a done deal, and the press should expect to have the open access that every other president has given them.
Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Well, very quickly, four quick things. One, we live in a fundamentally racist and hateful country, an awful country. We are horrible. We cannot ever stand up on the high ground. Secondly, evangelicals and Christians, I don't want to hear anything else about your family values and how much you love Jesus more than anybody else in the world. You just helped elect a man who talked about grabbing women by the vagina and literally talked about his penis size on a presidential debate. Democrats, we have watched the presidency be disrespected and just torn apart because of the person who was in the office. Return in kind. Republicans. Republicans, this right here is most important to Republicans because we've been listening to Republicans for the past 40 years tell us what they were going to do. Now they have the presidency, the House, the Senate, and the courts. I want you, Republicans, I want you to make sure that they repeal Obamacare. I want you to make sure that Republicans make abortions illegal again. I want you to make sure that they repeal the Clean Act, Clean Air Act, and every other thing that they've been talking about. Double the military, take food stamps away, all the things that they've been saying they were wanting to do, but Democrats was in the way. They're not in the way anymore. They can do everything that they want, and I want to see it done. If it's not done, then they've been lying to you again. They've had all these things before. And
Carl, we've got it. Our time is short here. You're ready to pull down the pillars there. I don't know who's going to go along with that and who's not, but there is a kind of, Jack, a kind of, hey, onstage moment here for Republicans. They do indeed have everything from both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue now and very likely a big court majority coming up. It's certainly in the Republican laps now, Jack.
Yes, you know, and in a world where Donald Trump can be elected president, anything is possible. Carl directs us to the Oval Office and to the role of racism in Trump's life and campaign. That birther lie that he propagated, 72% of registered Republicans, according to an NBC poll in July, have doubts whether President Obama was born here. That's because Mr. Trump, more than any single American, poisoned that well. And that's just shameful. I don't know how President Obama could even shake hands with it.
But he did. And he said he did it for the good of the country. He has to hope for Donald Trump's success, for the country's success. Let's pull together. Jack Beatty, it's great to have you with us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Paul Listening with WGN News with me here in Chicago and Politics Tonight on CLTV. Thank you so much,
Paul. Tom, been a pleasure.
And Nancy Cordes with CBS News. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Here we are on new terrain. Leonard Cohen has died this week. His most iconic song, Hallelujah. Originally released in 1984, it's been covered more than 300 times by different artists. We'll go out with it today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.